You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Days. Today, three Horatio Hornblower adventures. The Admiral Hornblower adventures were the literary creation of C.S. Forrester, who took actual stories from British naval heroes Lord Nelson, Sir George Cockburn, Lord Cochrane, Sir Edward Pellew, Jeremiah Coughlin, Sir James Gordon, and Sir William Hoste. The actions of the Royal Navy at that time, documented in official reports, provided much of the material for Hornblower's fictional adventures. And by the way, the name Horatio was inspired by the character in William Shakespeare's Hamlet, and chosen also because of its association with contemporary figures such as Nelson. Reviews for 1001 Radio Days are always appreciated. Thank you. Today's stories, Horatio deals with a mad king. And the second story, Horatio captures the Natividad. Both stories are full of action and adventure, and we hope you enjoy them very much.
Call all hands, beat to quarters. Run out the guns, stand by the starboard battery.
One broadside into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Linstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir, ready.
Fire!
Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's Indomitable Man of the Sea, Horatio Hornblower.
I'd been obliged to turn over the Natividad to the madman Don Julian, who called himself Divine, Almighty, El Supremo. Now he was coming aboard to murder my prisoners, the Spanish officers. I was determined to save them, at least.
Come here, you. Are you the Spanish sailing master?
Si, senor.
What is that image beside the taffrail there?
It's of the Virgin and Child, senor.
Throw it overboard. But wait, senor. I prefer to have the pleasure myself. So, now, which is the youngest of your mates?
I am, senor.
Very well. You will hold up your hand and declare your disbelief in any other divine lord than our gracious El Supremo. Up with your hand. Good. Now repeat after me. I swear...
I swear... No. No, senor. No, I cannot. I dare not.
No. Then we shall not meet you, shall we? Lieutenant Barrios, Interno, throw that overboard. No, the next man, you swear your disbelief?
There was no further trouble from the officers. They took the new oath one by one, as indeed they
must. Oh, you see, men...
Then de Crespo spoke to the crew... A mixed collection of Spaniards, Chinese, Negroes, Indians.
Sweeping the Spaniards from the dominion of America. Within a year, the whole of the land from Mexico to Peru will be at his feet. There will be an end of Spanish misrule, of brutal domination, of slavery in mine and field. There will be land for everybody. Freedom and happiness under El Supremo. You can join us all. The alternative you have seen. Now, who is for El Supremo?
I am too.
Thank you, too, Captain. I think there is no more need for your prize crew now. Should any insubordination arise later, I shall be able to deal with it.
I'm quite sure you will. Mr. Gerard, you will order your crew to withdraw and return to the Lydia. As my boat bore me back to my ship, I reflected bitterly on the murder of the Spanish master's mate. But there was nothing I could have done. At all costs, I must not fall out with Supremo or his followers while my orders remained uncompleted. As I reached my own deck, the boom of a gun from the Natividad was answered by one from the Lydia. A new flag was flying from the peak of the Natividad, blue with a yellow star in the middle.
Fire six! If I hadn't been born a ruddy fool, I shouldn't be here. Fire seven! I've left my wife and I left my home, everything that's dear. Fire eight!
Came riding down to the beach with his ragged retinue, and I met him there. As we rowed out to the Lydia, I ran my eye over the ship to see that all was ready to receive our ally with full military formality. But before he mounted the ladder, he remarked,
"The correct salute for me, Capitan, is 23 guns."
Mr. Bush, pass the word to Mr. Marsh for 23 guns.
Don't look so stricken, Mr. Bush. It's two more than His Majesty himself receives. It's entirely meaningless.
Aye, sir. Dinner will be served shortly, El Supremo. Would you care to come below?
I will dine here, alone. Let the food be brought to me.
Misery and embarrassment of our makeshift dinner in the gunroom, into which we crowded with Supremo's retinue, was mercifully cut short by the arrival of the officer of the watch.
I beg your pardon, sir, but there's a messenger from the shore. I can't understand a word he says.
Very well, I'll come on deck. I think you'd better accompany me, Mr. Bush.
Thank you, sir.
Load, thank heaven. Never seen such a dastardly murderous gang of cutthroats in my life. Soldiers, they call them. I'd give a week's backy to know what the captain's up to. He don't stand what he's standing from this Supremo for nothing.
Well, here we are. Lay it alongside. Come on, Ansem, up that ladder. Up the ladder, I say. We aren't sitting here all day.
Lord, Jesus. Oh,
stupid as a powder monkey. Let's have his nasty throat. Stand from under!
Tradition fine time to go swimming, is it?
He can't swim. We'll have to fish him out.
All right. I'll go in for him. Here, out the way there. Well, here goes.
Converse with Lieutenant Bush.
Well, it's pleasant to be at sea again, Mr. Bush, with our ship to ourselves.
It's better than a tonic, sir. Harvey's glad to return to work too, sir. He didn't like hiding in the cable tier after we picked him up. It mightn't be a bad thing, sir, if that fellow Supremo happened to get killed in the fighting.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Bush.
Hey, no!
Hey, you.
Where away? On the port bow, sir! A two-masted lugger, sir! She's right to windward! Running down to us under all sail, sir!
She don't like the look of our gun, sir. She's hove to. Just out of range. Hey, she's setting about, sir.
The dinghy danced jerkily across the water, and presently a man came scrambling up the ladder. So many strange figures had mounted that ladder of late. This new arrival wore the full dress of the Spanish Royal Navy, and his epaulettes gleamed in the sun. He came forward and bowed.
Captain Hornblower.
I am Captain Hornblower.
Captain Manuel Diaz at your service. I have to welcome you as the new ally of Spain.
Ally of Spain? Is
this a jest, sir?
Sure, it is no jest, Captain. I've been seeking you for the past 4 days. Let me explain.
Please.
Last month, Napoleon Bonaparte stole our King Ferdinand from us and has named his brother Joseph King of Spain. In consequence, the Spanish government has signed a treaty of perpetual alliance and friendship with His Majesty of England. Lest you doubt me, sir, I have here some letters. One from your admiral in the Leeward Islands, sent overland from Portobello, one from His Excellency the Viceroy of Peru, and one from the English lady in Panama.
Oh, thank you. And be good enough to pardon me while I retire to study these documents.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Bush, you will entertain Captain Diaz until my return.
Aye, aye, sir.
Senor Diaz, everything appears to be in order.
Senor?
Greetings to our new allies. I am proud to be serving with Spain against the Corsican tyrant.
Thank you, Captain. We were very much afraid lest you should fall in with the Natividad before you heard the news, because she has not heard it either. In that case, I'm afraid your fine frigate would have come to serious harm.
Navit, bring the prisoners up from the cable tier, quickly.
Aye, aye, sir.
I regret to have to tell you, senor, that by evil chance, the Natividad met us a week ago.
You met the Natividad?
I plunged feverishly into an explanation, but it was not easy to tell a Spanish captain that I'd captured a ship twice my power without receiving one shot, nor to explain that the ship was now under the flag of El Supremo. Then, a fresh and harassing aspect of the situation struck him.
Something must be done. The Manilla Galleon is at sea. She's due to arrive at Acapulco next month with priceless treasure. The Natividad will intercept her and... Oh, her loss might well bankrupt our government.
Very well, sir. My duty is plain. I will take my ship back to fight the Natividad.
Thank you, Captain. You will call at Panama first to consult the Viceroy?
Yes.
Then I will bid you goodbye for the time being. If I reach Panama first, I will arrange your welcome.
Thank you, sir. You see, Mr. Bush, the situation is complicated.
It's not your fault, sir. After all, you have only obeyed your Admiralty orders.
The Lords of the Admiralty will not allow such a small point to influence their opinion of a captain and his officers, who are the cause of such trouble, Mr. Bush.
I feel you're right, sir.
However, there's another and more pressing matter. Lady Barbara Wellesley is at Panama and desires a passage in the Lydia to Europe.
Sir, how could we carry such a lady in the Lydia? A frigate is hardly equipped for comfort.
That is what I shall have to point out to the lady. So if she has the normal Wellesley blood in her, I suspect I shall be wasting my time. I was soon to have an opportunity of finding out at first hand. We sailed into the roadstead of Panama the next morning.
There's a lady in the boat, sir. An English lady, I think. Wants to come aboard, sir.
She seems disinclined to wait for permission, it seems. We shall take no action, Mr. Bush. One of those masculine women. No real woman would catch and climb a rope ladder like that. Besides, what's an English woman doing in Panama without a male escort?
Mr. Midshipman, please be so good as to have my luggage brought up out of the boat.
There's the captain, madam.
Yes, so I see. But please have my luggage brought up while I speak to him.
I faced an internal struggle. I disliked the aristocracy. I could not forget that as a doctor's son, I had had to touch my hat to the local squire. Yet it would be foolish for a poverty-stricken frigate captain with no influence to offend a member of such a family as the Wellesleys. For the present, I decided on icy formality.
Are you the captain of this ship, sir?
Captain Hornblower, at your service, ma'am.
Well, I am Lady Barbara Wellesley. I wrote you a note requesting a passage to England. I trust you received it?
I did, ma'am, but I do not think it wise for your ladyship to join this vessel.
Please tell me why, sir.
Because, ma'am, we shall shortly be in action with the enemy. Also, we shall have to return to England via Cape Horn. Your ladyship would be well advised to make your way to Portobello. From there, you could reach Jamaica and obtain a berth in a West India packet, which is accustomed to female passengers.
I have informed you, sir, that there is yellow fever in Portobello.
Yes, ma'am, but...
1,000 persons died of it last week. That is why I removed to Panama.
May I ask why your ladyship was in Portobello?
Because, sir, the West Indian packet in which I was a female passenger was captured by a Spanish privateer and brought there.
I see.
I regret, sir, that I cannot tell you the name of my grandmother's cook, but I shall be glad to answer any further questions which a gentleman of breeding would ask.
Yes, but we are going out to fight. To
fight a ship of twice our force. It will be dangerous.
I would rather be on your ship, whomever you have to fight, than to be in Panama with a yellow fever.
Mm-hmm. Well, what of Cape Horn, ma'am?
Well, I have no knowledge of it. But I've twice rounded the Cape of Good Hope during my brother's governor generalship, and I have never yet been seasick. Well, soon, Captain, I will come to think that I shall be unwelcome aboard. I can hardly imagine that a gentleman holding the King's commission would be discourteous to a woman, especially to a woman with my name.
I was only doing my duty, ma'am, in pointing out the dangers to which you will be exposed. For myself, nothing would give me greater pleasure than your presence.
Supremo, and now to Lady Barbara. If I offended this lady, I might, well, never command a ship again. My wife and I might rot on half pay for the rest of our lives. I was 37 and not more than 1/8 of the way up the captain's list. The goodwill at the Wellensleys might enable me to reach flag rank.
Begging your pardon, ma'am, but your luggage is aboard.
Oh, thank you. Be so kind as to give this to the boat.
But, ma'am, there will be no room in your cabin for a tenth of that luggage.
I am aware of that, sir. I have dwelt in a cabin before. That sea chest will hold all I require. The rest can be put where you will. And now, may I see my cabin?
You see, your ladyship, a frigate has few of the luxuries of an Indiaman.
I was just thinking that it was scandalous that a king's officer should be given such quarters.
And as I left to pay my call on the viceroy...
Where shall I serve her ladyship's dinner, sir?
I don't know, Bush. Ask her, blast you.
Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Linstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire.
Presenting Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's Indomitable Man of the Sea, Horatio Hornblower.
Movies, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
For your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Problems in my seafaring career. But as I look back now, I can remember none graver than that which faced me as I prepared to sail in my frigate in search of the Natividad. I had captured her before in harbor, by night and by surprise. Now, I must meet her on the open sea, where her enormous superiority in firing force must give her the advantage. Well, that was bad enough. Now I had the additional responsibility of a high-born and influential passenger, Lady Barbara Wellesley. When I returned to the ship after calling on the Viceroy at Panama, I summoned Bush, my first lieutenant, to my cabin.
Mr. Bush, where's Lady Barbara?
She's on the quarter deck, sir. I had the carpenter knock up her hammock chair for her. Huh? I had a bit of awning rigged so as to give her some shade.
Mr. Bush, the Lydia is a frigate about to go into action, not an Indiaman with nothing to do but pamper passengers.
No, sir.
If Lady Wellesley takes advantage of her position and forces me to carry her to England, I cannot refuse. But this is no reason why my ship should be turned into a boudoir.
No, sir.
Confound you, Bush. Can't you say anything but no, sir?
Yes, sir. Forgive me, sir, but it would have been highly dangerous for a lay ship to stay ashore with yellow fever spreading as it is.
So she seeks safety by coming aboard a ship which is about to fight an enemy twice its size. Now, hark ye, Mr. Bush, no good will come of this. If we win the battle, we shall be censured for exposing her ladyship to danger. If we lose it,
I cannot imagine you losing any battle, sir. Not if it was the whole Spanish fleet instead of just one ship.
Yes, when I want your opinion, Mr. Bush, good or otherwise, I will ask for it. How am I going to pace my quarter deck with a woman sitting there? The thing I've just thought is my shower bath under the pump on deck. Look, have a screen rigged. See that the crew are warned about dress, too. In this heat, most of them work half naked.
Aye, sir.
She was still on the quarter deck when I went to attend to the business of getting the ship underway. It was infuriating. I must do so dead in line with the anchor, with no slack in the cable, or we might well bring the masts and rigging about our ears.
Hard to starboard!
No, moving it, sir!
Smartly with the braces now. Now she's checked, Mr. Bush. She's moving forward. Mr. Bush, now, hands aloft, set every sail that'll draw.
All hands aloft!
Gather
it
quickly. Take in the cable.
She's making, sir. She's making.
Yes, but we mustn't sail up to our anchor with too much speed on her. When I give the order, Mr. Bush, we shall see how well you've drilled your crew. Those sails must come off her like lightning, or they're not to be taken aback.
They will, sir. I swear they're the crew.
Stand by. Now.
Take her off, sail. Cautious, topsail, and grasp your life. Hard aboard. Hard aboard.
Capstan there. Cable in. Quicker.
Round, round, brassy. Fly, fly, yes, the big fly.
The moment had come. Sail off, the Lydia was drifting up to her anchor. Now was the moment when either she would raise it or the maneuver would end in disaster. Every man aboard, save the wildly rushing capstan hands, held his breath.
Anchors free, sir!
Set all sail, Mr. Bush.
Aye, sir. By heaven, sir. You've shown those Spaniards the finest bit of seamanship they'll ever see in their lives.
Kindly attend to your duties, Mr. Bush.
Aye, aye, sir.
until we were standing out of the gulf, close hauled, that I was free to communicate to Lady Barbara the news I had heard from the Viceroy. In any case, good manners necessitated that I should address her. I couldn't ignore her presence, however much I might resent it. She sat in her hammock chair by the taffrail, her servant Hebe, the negress, at her feet. She was in animated conversation with Gerard, the officer of the watch, and I noted with amusement that Gerard broke off the conversation and moved away as I approached. She acknowledged my bow with a smile.
Oh, it's heavenly to be at sea again, Captain. And may I congratulate you on your amazing seamanship in raising your anchor. Also, you've given me no opportunity to tell you how grateful I am to you for taking me away from Panama. I was treated well enough, but, well, I was in charge of Her Excellency. An admirable woman, but oh, so dull. In Spanish America, women are treated like Mohammedans. And Spanish American food, oh.
On the latter point, I agree heartily, Your Ladyship.
Well, will you not sit down, Captain?
Sit down on my own quarter deck. Thank you, Your Ladyship, but I've never done such a thing in my life. If you'll forgive me, I prefer to stand. I came to give you good news. Your brother, Sir Arthur, has won a great victory over the French in Portugal.
A great victory? Well, that is very good news. I've always been proud of Arthur, and this makes me prouder still.
Well, I am happy to be the first to congratulate his sister.
Oh, Captain, just look at that setting sun. One almost expects to hear a hiss as it sinks into the sea.
Yes, I endeavor never to miss the sunset in these waters, Your Ladyship. It's a daily miracle.
Ah, beautiful. Exquisite.
I hope Your Ladyship was well provided for during my absence ashore. If there's anything further that lies within my power...
Well, there's just one thing, Captain, that I should like to ask as a favor.
What is that?
That is that you do not call me Your Ladyship. Call me Lady Barbara, if you will.
Certainly, Lady Barbara.
And if Lady Barbara doesn't come easily to you and you wish to attract my attention, you can always say... Oh, Captain, I'm so sorry. Please accept my apologies. I realize now that to mock you was quite unforgivable.
There's nothing to forgive, ma'am. And now, if you will forgive me in your turn, I must attend to my duties.
One moment, please. Captain, I know that you've much on your mind. I know that before you sail for home, you must fight the Natividad. Will you tell me, what are your prospects in that battle?
Well, the Natividad, ma'am, is a two-decker with 50 guns against my 36. She is commanded by Vice Admiral de Crespo, a ruthless and bloodthirsty man who will never surrender. Whatever his faults, he's no coward. But against his force, I have perhaps a little experience. Capable and loyal officers and a very well-trained crew.
And they're English. That counts for much. You may be frank with me, Captain. What will happen if we should lose?
If I or my crew are taken alive, we shall be hanged or tortured. El Supremo will show no mercy to us for having turned against him. And you... it shall be my last care to see that you do not fall into the hands of de Crespo alive.
Thank you, Captain. But you're not to worry about me, nor to allow my presence to influence you. Should it come to the worst, I too am English and a Wellesley. I know how to die. Sailors would die young.
Well, it's really...
Stand up! Sail ho!
Sail.
Right ahead! Looks like the Natividad, sir!
How is she headed?
On the starboard deck, sir! Same as us! She is the Natividad, sir! I can see the catamaran topsail!
Report any activity!
Aye, aye, sir! She's seen us, sir! She's wearing out on port deck, heading up the wind of us, sir!
ship to face about and challenge. Of course, she's not a Spanish ship now. She shan't get the weather gauge of me, whatever happens.
And the voice is there. You all, keep her as near a wind as you might.
Mr. Bush, beat the quarters, if you please, and clear for action. Maid with you and stay in the cockpit until the action is over. No, no, not the cockpit. We'll leave that for the wounded. Go to the cable chair.
Captain!
I have no time to discuss the matter, ma'am. Mr. Clay, conduct her ladyship to the cable chair. See if she is safe before you leave her. Those are my orders, Mr. Clay.
Mr. Bush's incessant drilling of the crew showed its value now. Every man knew his job and did it swiftly and well. The decks were soused with water and strewn with sand. The bulkheads were knocked away. The fire parties took their places at the pumps. The boys ran with cartridges for the guns. And down below, the acting surgeon was dragging the midshipmen's chests together in the cockpit to make an operating table.
The more this sea gets up, the better, sir. The Shinnecad won't be able to open their lower gun ports.
No. Uh-huh. I'll trouble you to have two reefs taken in those topsails.
Aye, aye, sir. Top of the roof! Two reefs in the topsail!
Excuse me, sir. With all this spray breaking aboard, you think we can rely on the flint triggers for the guns? Or shall we have the slow matches lit in the tubs?
Yeah, better light the matches in case.
Wheel that! Steal small, blast you! Walk it! Both ships are approaching each other at an angle. Steer so that when we meet, our ship has the wind of the other. Do you understand?
Aye, aye, sir! Look, sir, there's a puff of smoke. She's open fire.
Man's a fool to waste powder and shot at such range. Never forget, Mr. Bush, a first broadside discharge in close quarters with guns carefully loaded by crews with time to think is worth 10 under any other circumstances.
Yes, sir. We'd be passing mighty close, sir, if we both stay on this course. In fact, we'll meet bow to bow. No telling who'll have the weather gauge. That was closer. Here comes another.
Got us. Two men down at number four gun, sir.
Christmas! We're going to shave it close.
Stand by, Mr. Rayner. No fire as your guns bear. Wheel her up. Watch your helm a weather.
Sir.
Now, hold her as she comes on. Fire!
Nervousness and fear of some fatal error was gone. I stared across the tossing sea at the Natividad. I could see De Crespo up on the poop. The fellow actually had the insolence to wave airily at me. We had had the advantage from our maneuver, two broadsides into her at close range, with only one shot in reply. Now, we had to pay for it. I saw the rudder of our opponent kick over, and the next moment the two-decker had swung round and was hurtling down upon us.
Popular! Take your aim!
Steady, lads. We shall have a broadside from her, too.
Fire! Stop your bits! When the smoke clears, fire as you will!
The Crespo was evidently unable to trust his crew to fire independently and was working them to the word of command. He was doing it well, too. At intervals, as the sea permitted, her lower deck ports were opening like clockwork, and her big 24-pounders were vomiting flame and smoke.
What work is this, sir?
Yes, Mr. Bush, have the dead carried away from the guns. The crews cannot work properly. The men had better lie on the deck and drag them. It's death to stand in that iron hail. And, Mr. Bush, I fear the Natividad's superior force is too great for us to continue this close work. We shall have to use cunning if we're to survive.
It's a pity, sir, but I'm afraid you're right.
Answer the braces. Now, Mr. Bush, back the main topsail a trifle to take way off us.
And let the Natividad get ahead.
Aye, aye, sir. Now, tack ship and run across her stern. A broadside, Mr. Gerard.
Aye, aye, sir.
Attack again. Front end braces,
sir.
Back across our stern.
Your guns, Mr. Rayner.
Glorious. Damn my heart. Glorious. Two broadsides into a stern. She's too big and clumsy to deck her out like us, sir.
Yes, save your satisfaction for the end. She's coming back at us.
Oh, she is, sir. And her lower gun ports are open as well this time. Going to take some real punishment now. There's Dick Crispo, grinning like an ape. I hope he was killed, sir, in our broadsides. Here she comes. Oh, what we about to receive.
Thank you. sir.
One broadside into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Flintstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire!
Presenting Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's Indomitable Man of the Sea, Horatio Hornblower.
Probability of death and defeat stared me in the face. But I can close my eyes even now and feel again that exhaustion and faintness that I dared not let any man see. It was a nightmare pause in a nightmare battle. Two partially disabled ships drifting rapidly apart, and each with no purpose than to patch its wounds and return to destroy the other.
I can see the Nativity head again now the score's cleared in, sir.
How does she bear?
About 2 points on the starboard beam, sir.
Ah.
There. She's hove to. Looks a bit lopsided without her foremost.
She seems to have made no attempt as yet to rig a new one. Well, as soon as we can carry some sail aft so that we can beat the wind over, we'll have it at our mercy. We must try and do it before nightfall, Mr. Bush, or we may lose her altogether in the dark. And now what's this?
It's the funeral party, sir.
Oh.
Already going out there.
How many?
14, sir.
Very well. Mr. Bush, have all hands stop work, but remain where they are. I intend no disrespect to the dead, but this ceremony must be swift or the living may be endangered.
Aye, aye, sir.
Bodies to the deep.
I think we checked the leaks now, sir. The sail is fathered under the bottom and seems to be holding. I've been able to release all but 20 men from the pumps.
Sure enough. Everything ready now for hoisting the mast?
All ready, sir.
Right. Now, Mr. Bush, it is important that nobody should haul or carry out any movement except by orders. I shall try to use the pitching of the ship to help in the raising of the mast. And if any man acts without my orders, I'll have him flogged.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hands to the windlass. And Sir Gerard, attend to those swings.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Galbraith, into the mizzen tent.
Right, sir.
The ropes will slip off the mast head.
If it jerks away from that stump, it'll sweep the deck like a broadside.
You trust the old man. He knows what he's doing, all. Oh, if he does, turn to go there.
Oh! Oh!
Hoist the way there.
Oh! Oh!
Easy! A mast hoisting! There. There, see that? Clever the old man is. As the bows went up, so he ups the mast a bit. Then when the bows drop, he lays off. Oh, nice timing, that is.
Yeah, better not make no mistakes, though.
He won't make no mistakes. I've never seen him make one yet. Oh, don't he look tired, though? There, water.
time the long and dangerous struggle with the mast was over and it stood vertical at last, while the men fished it firmly to the stump of the old mizzen, I was sick with weariness. I'd been on my quarterdeck for over 8 hours with neither rest nor food. And through the stress and labor of the battle, I was beginning to find it difficult to concentrate upon anything. So that Bush had spoken twice before I could force myself to listen.
I said, sir, that it was a magnificent piece of work, if you'll allow me to say so, sir. Shall I send up the topmast and yards now, sir?
I fear it'll be useless to attempt to carry any canvas in this wind and sea, Mr. Bush. And the Trinidad is barely in sight now.
Just a smudge on the horizon, sir.
Aye.
There's not much chance of renewing the action till the wind takes off a bit.
Yes, I cannot imagine the Admiralty accepting that statement in a report.
But it's true enough, sir. We're badly knocked about, and the weather's too rough to carry on the fight.
Nevertheless, the report would be received with pitying smiles, Mr. Bush. The excuse is too old, like the uncharted rock which always causes a wreck. The Admiralty's 10,000 miles away, and they can't judge the strength of this storm from there. Yet even though I should be accused of cowardice, there's nothing I can do until the weather moderates.
No, sir, there's not. And in that case, sir, why not take a rest? You look mortally tired, sir. Indeed you do. Let me send and have a berth screened off for you in the wardroom.
Fiddlesticks, Mr. Bush, it's you who need a rest. Dismiss the starboard watch and go below and turn in. While the enemy is in sight, I shall stay on deck.
But, sir, I think...
I gave you an order, Mr. Bush.
Aye, aye, sir.
Good fellow, Bush, but a fool, a sentimental fool. He'd treat me like an old woman if I'd let him. Yes, I wonder how Lady Barbara is getting on. Oh, confound it. Here's that idiot of a steward. Now, can't anybody leave me alone?
Well, Paul Wheel, what do you want?
Well, I've been to attend to the lady, sir. I screened off a bit of the orlop for her, sir.
The orlop? But the wounded are in there.
Well, they're mostly quiet now, sir.
Well, I couldn't leave her in the cable tier.
Oh. I've stung the hammock for her. She nicked into it like a bird, sir. Took a bit of grub, too, and a glass of wine, she did.
Oh, very good, Paul.
Well, now, it stands to reason, sir. A frigate in the sea like this, and a battle-like lot with what we've had is, well, it's a bit rough on an high-born lady.
Just confine yourself to facts and keep your opinions to yourself, Paul Wheel. The high-born lady joined this ship of her own free will, knowing that she was about to go into action.
Aye, aye, sir. Now, about you, sir. Here's some dry clothes and a chest in the storeroom. I'm afraid the last broadside dumped for everything in your cabin.
No, I don't want any dry clothes.
Of course you don't, sir. Now, I wouldn't suggest it, except in... Well, if it takes cold, sir, you won't be fit when it catches up within the Trinidad. Will you change up here, sir, or come below? Now, look. If I just lash this here hammock chair to the rail, sir... You could sit there when you've changed and have this biscuit and rum, couldn't you, sir? And this here boat cloak will keep some of the spray off you. But you won't have to leave the deck.
Paul Wheel, are you presuming to give me orders?
Orders, sir? Me? I hope sir knows my place, sir. It's all right, Mr. Bush, sir. You can turn in now. Captain's in his chair and sleeping like a baby, sir.
Good heavens, I must have dozed off. What time is it, I wonder? Impossible, it's after midnight. As black as the Earl of Hell's riding boots. Feels to me as though the weather's improving. Let's have a look at the binnacle.
Ah, Mr. Bush. Wind shifting southerly and moderated, sir. Wish there's a bit of starlight, even. Can't see a thing. The Trinidad might be 20 miles away or only 200 yards.
Yes, I doubt she's close. She was going away to leeward rapidly when we last saw her.
She can't have carried out all the repairs she'll need in this weather. What do you think she'll do, sir?
That fellow Crespo commands her is no fool. I believe he'll try to avoid us until he can get into the Gulf of Fonseca and refit. He'd like us to follow him into the Gulf, so he'd have the advantage of the shore batteries as well.
But he can't make much sail in his crippled condition, sir. And even if he could, the wind is wrong for getting to the Gulf.
I had observed that fact, Mr. Bush. I believe he'll reach far out to sea and claw southwards as far as he can.
I shall return to my chair until daylight and attempt to work out what is likely to be his position at dawn.
Aye, aye, sir.
Morning, sir. Sea's going down fast, sir, and the wind's taken off. Sun will be up in 10 minutes.
Yes, we'll make sail, if you please, Mr. Bush. Here is the course you are to sail. But as I gave the course, I knew that it was sheer guesswork. Every yard I sailed might be away from Metatribidad while she hurried to safety. My heart was heavy with misgiving, for I knew that if I had failed, there would be many who would attribute that failure to incompetence or cowardice. Over the horizon, I paced the quarterdeck with every appearance of unconcern, determined not to allow anyone to guess at the doubts and fears which tormented me. When the light should be sufficient for the masthead lookout to scan the horizon, I might be justified or ruined. Yet even my resolution to remain calm must have wavered when my gloomy thoughts were pierced by a wild cry from aloft.
We found her, sir. We found her. You are right again, sir. Look, sir. You can see her from here with the glass. Dead ahead. She's coming round, sir. She's running away.
Yes, Crespo wishes to postpone action. He prefers discretion to heroics, and quite rightly, Mr. Bush. However, set every stitch we can carry. Send the hands to breakfast. If we engage, there's no telling when they'll eat again, if ever.
Aye, aye, sir. Hands to breakfast. We're gaining, sir. She'll not get away this time. We'll blow her right out of the water.
Never underestimate your opponent, Mr. Bush. Those 24-pounders of hers are heavy metal. We have a ship which is leaking like a sieve, has a makeshift rig, and is 64 men short. And our firing force is far inferior to hers.
You think the wind's going to hold, sir? Seems to me as if the sun's swallowing it. Whew, it's getting mighty hot, too. It'll be just our luck to lose the wind now. I can't trim it anymore. Hi! You at the wheel!
Oh,
here, small blast you!
I can't, sir, begging your pardon. There ain't enough wind.
Damn it, he's right. The wind's gone, sir. And look at that sky. It's like brass. But in a dead calm and well out of range.
We will tow with the boats. Have the launch and cutter hoisted out.
Boats away! Cutter's crew! Launch's crew!
Now then, men. You've got a hard task, but it must be done. You've got to pull. Pull till your muscles crack and your hands burst. Now get your clothes off and pull naked. I'll have you relieved in an hour. Now, pull!
Pull together! Give way!
Look at that, Mr. Jarrett. That puff of smoke from the Trinidad.
Yes, she carries two long 18s aft. We're going to run the gauntlet of those for the next hour.
That was nearer, about 50 yards off our starboard quarter.
Mr. Gerard, ask Mr. Marsh to see what he can do with the long 9 on our forecastle.
Aye, sir.
I know it's not much use, but it'll cheer the men to feel that we're replying.
Aye, sir. He's ready and waiting.
Very good, Mr. Marsh. Show them some shooting.
Stand by, gun crew. Give me the lanyard.
Very good. Try again.
Here comes some more, fellas. That one got us just above the waterline. Followed. Oh, well done, Mr. Marsh. Right alongside her.
Yes, Mr. Bush, we shall now have 25 guns trained on us instead of two. She's positioning for a broadside. We shall have some pebbles about our ears ere long, lads. Let's show them that Englishmen don't care.
Terrible shooting. Not more
more than two hits. Mr. Galbraith, let that main gallant stay. Splice directly.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Bush, at what distance would you say she is now?
Oh, 3/4 mile, I should say, sir.
So I think. I fear our carronades will not be effective at that distance. Relieve the boat's crews and see if fresh men can pull us nearer.
Aye, sir.
It was intolerably hot. The smell of pitch from the deck seams, the bitter tang of powder, and the smell of the blood from the wounded, combined with my fatigue and anxiety to make me feel deathly sick. I feared to disgrace myself by being sick in front of the men. They, too, no longer joked at the guns. They were beginning to sulk under punishment. It was a bad sign. Sullivan!
Sir!
Here, Sullivan. You your fiddle?
Aye, sir, I have that.
All right, well, we'll have a hornpipe. Benskin, Hall, McAvoy, a hornpipe from each of you and a guinea for the man that does his best.
On my words, Mr. Gerald, this will be a tale told and retold in years to come. How Captain Hornblower had his ship towed into action with hornpipes being danced on her main deck.
Mr. Howell sent me.
Yes, well?
Starboard side chain pump knocked all to pieces.
Well, my boy?
Well, he's rigging another one, sir, but it'll be an hour before it works. He told me to tell you the water's gaining a little, sir.
Oh, very well.
Please, sir, there was 14 men all knocked to smash at the pump. Horrible, sir. I see one man's head.
Tell no boy. Run back to Mr. Howell and tell him the captain is sure he will do his best.
Oh, I see.
There's too much smoke to see properly. But it's my belief we've hit her hard, sir.
Confound this smoke. It's like being in a fog.
Ah, Crystal, what is it?
I think I can feel a very light air blowing, sir.
Yes, I believe there is.
Ah, look at that.
Look, the smoke's blowing away, sir.
Ooh,
just look at the nativity.
Charles, she's a wreck. There's only others and masts standing.
Rigging all round her like a net. And look at that great hole in her side. There's 3 gunboats planted into one there.
She's low in the water, but she's still fighting, by heaven.
Oh, no. We'll be on her soon. The closer we are, the quicker we'll finish it.
And stand by for the help orders. Albert Garonet's load with great shots.
Look at them crouching in the forecastle. They're going to try and board us. Hell! Here they come!
Garonet! Fire!
Enemy, Mr. Bush. Horatio Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Call all hands. Beat to quarters.